Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up, and take it away. Take it away.
Oh, holy crap, people.
What the hell is that?
Telling you what, they're saying a little more volume. It might be a little low on the side of Dan's computer, which would be a bad thing for our interview, of course.
Well, no, I'll turn it up I'll crank it up to full like it was before. We got to come over here and work on some gains over there, because I think a couple of knobs got tweaked that shouldn't have gotten tweaked.
We got to work on a lot of things, I think. I hope you guys can finally hear us through our slew of errors today.
The comedy of errors, yes.
What happened in a nutshell, basically, is most of you know that Dan is not here. Dan is not here today. He normally runs the show off his equipment at his house, and he's got everything set up, you know, just the way he likes it, and on his machine with his personal passwords and stuff like that, and wires running who the hell knows where. And so he had to go tonight and attend some other business, and told us we were, you know, welcome to come over to his place and just invade and
drink his beer.
Yeah, and run the show from here. So, of course, we came here to run the stuff, and Dan was really great today. He set everything up on our streaming server for us, ready to go. And we got here and started getting ready to go on and told it to start recording and connect to the streams. And guess what? No IP address. No IP address at all. Wouldn't connect to shit. So that was our emergency reboot session. And of course, we're still going to have run into problems like we don't know where the hell Dan's connection to any of the, you know, Aster server is and stuff like that. It's just a mess.
Because we're just not familiar with his environment.
Yeah.
Not to make freaking excuses.
He's got everything set up the way he likes it on his computers. Changed his passwords for us and everything. The nice guy.
And
here we are. But at least we're on the thing now, right?
You are currently the only person in the conference.
We are the only person in the conference room. Means our guest is not online.
That's okay.
Yet.
So what the hell's going on? Now that we finally got the show on the road, we are recording, right?
What's going on?
We hope so.
I hope like hell we're recording. If we're not recording, I hope one of you guys out there is, because, you know, you never
know.
We're
going to need the file.
Yeah, we might need the file, and your guys are absolutely positive that this is recording over here, this little iRiver. It's going to be our salvation for the night.
It's counting, so I'm assuming that it's recording.
Okay, I'm gonna not touch it, and we're gonna hope for the best.
Hopefully, the battery doesn't run out.
As far as the high quality thing,
it's got 2.5 hours
recording time.
Yeah,
I hope so, man.
So we'll see.
it'd be like sending Alan out for a great way hunt for a AA battery in the middle of the show or something like that.
Pretty funny, man.
There you go.
Oh, there we go. We're
all right. We're good to go.
We're
already
ready.
We got to stop and restart everything again, right?
So what's going on this week, fellas?
Well, I figured we start right out by playing Dan's...
He has a message for
Dan's
us?
Dan's little message for us. You guys want to hear that?
What the
sure.
hell?
I'm sure they're probably saying, yeah, we want to hear. Except for I can't see it because I'm on a different screen. So here it is.
Hey, Dan here. Sorry I couldn't be here tonight. Business to attend to in another state. But I did want to just make mention, in case these guys didn't do it, that the new issue of Linux Journal is an interesting change of events for Linux Journal. There's a new format, and I think it's pretty impressive. The actual size of the magazine has increased in width, and the layout is really, I think, clean and pretty. And it's exciting new change. It reminds me a lot of the crispness of Tux Magazine. And thumbs up to Linux Journal. Good stuff, guys. If you're not reading Linux Journal, I don't know what's wrong with you. But you guys have a great week. I'll let you suffer through these three. And enjoy the Arch stuff, because I know, damn it, I wish I was there. And I'll see you next week. Have fun. Bye. I'm off to the Buddy Ranch.
Yeah.
Notice he said Buddy Ranch.
Buddy Ranch. Ranch.
not Bunny Ranch. Buddy Ranch.
Buddy Ranch.
As in, like, Dude Ranch, you know, where all the dudes are dressed up in their their tight little chaps and stuff like
the trainer,
that.
The trainer ranch.
That's the kind of dude ranch that, you know, Dan likes.
He's going to tango.
Oh, man. So last weekend, right? Me and Link, we went to the show over at the Allentown Fairgrounds.
Yes.
Looking for bargains and whatever we can get our little grubby hands on. And I picked up an HP LaserJet 4M for $25.
See, it isn't
with
so.
A network card, man. Unfreaking real. I plugged that sucker in at home, man. Awesome. What a bargain, man.
Yeah.
You got some cool stuff too, man.
I did. I got what the hell did I get? I got some memory from my old laptop. I increased it from 128 megs of RAM to the maximum, I guess, is 256. I didn't know this, but the memory guy said that because it's a P2, I guess, P2 400, he said the maximum memory I could put in it was 256 megs, 128 megs sticks. I figured for sure I could at least put 512 in it, but he said no. So I got that. I got some memory for my my Slackintosh, which is cool. I bumped that up to 512 megs of RAM. And I'll tell you what, 512 megs of RAM on a 400 megahertz Macintosh makes it run real nice.
Did you do that by doing the top stick or the bottom stick?
Well, see, now mine is a little different. It's a, I don't know if it's a DV or what the DV is, but mine is a 400 megahertz Indigo.
Okay.
Okay. And on the bottom of it, there's this little plastic panel that just flips. Like you see, you have three screws.
Yeah.
This is just a little turning knob, and a plastic panel flips out.
Oh, that's cool.
And both memory slots are right there. And also, there's another slot, which I'm assuming is maybe cache or something like that. Don't know a damn thing about it. But I pulled the memory stick out before I went to the show, and I noticed that it was PC 100, there was a 128 meg stick and a 64 meg stick, a PC, what I thought was PC 100,
okay,
SD RAM. And so I went to the show and I got PC 133, two 256 meg sticks, and just popped it right in, and damned if it didn't start right up and work. So
Cool,
man.
It makes it real nice.
I did get the sound up and running on mine.
Did you find that?
All I had to do was I ran all the config on it because it was all set up and everything. But mine is different. Mine is headphones controls the speaker on mine.
Aha!
So it was sort of backwards, but it sounds really nice. Now I got to figure out what I want to do with it.
I picked up some memory.
But you're running Slackintosh, though, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I picked up some memory, too, and unfortunately I didn't have as good results as you did, Link. I currently have 256 meg in my laptop, and I want to get a gig slot, you know, a gig card, and I bought it from the same guy that you did.
Mm-hmm.
I plugged in it right then and there, and the system came up okay. The only thing that was a little odd was that the suspend was hanging, coming back up. No big deal. I took it home. I was running for a few hours, and the system started acting very flaky. I would go to, like, my virtual terminal sessions, and I would start getting kernel panics. So that was not a good thing.
No.
Laptop memory is very finicky, so I pulled it out right away and I put back my old one in there, and it was working fine. The next day I went back, and the guy took the card back and gave me a refund, no questions asked. So he was cool about that. And what I wound up doing was I ordered some Crucial memory from Newegg.
Because it was just Crucial.
And it was cheaper.
You had memory.
It was Crucial.
It was $20
that
cheaper than what I paid at the show. That's including shipping, and I got it in a day. So this is what I got running now, and
banging.
It seems to be okay. The suspend is still not working, so I'm looking to see, you know, maybe there's a configuration file I have to change, you know, because I went from 256 to
because of your memory size here or something
like
that, right?
Yeah, something I probably have to change, uh-huh. So I'm looking into that. But
it's
running pretty well, man. A gig on this machine is pretty nice.
Oh, a gig
gig on any machine is real nice.
A gig on any machine is real nice. Yeah, the gig that I have on my workstation now is that makes things much better, man. I can do all kinds of stuff at the same time now.
I got OpenOffice running. Well, I got Kino running. I got Audacity running. It's all running at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be getting a new machine at work.
Ooh.
Which will have eight gigs of memory in it.
So you're going to get another Sun?
No, I'm getting a Linux box actually now.
Really?
On it. Because the Cadence that we use is actually running Linux now. And they want to try out. They want to try
and
that
that's,
out.
And that's refresh everybody's memory because I know what you're talking about.
Well,
but
Cadence
you happen to be...
I'm a layout designer.
Working with...
ICs.
working with ICs. He does his layout designs, doing Cadence, which is what, for everybody's benefit?
Cadence is a CAD package, right, especially designed for doing IC layout
doing
work.
Doing IC layout work. And everybody's, one of the big sticking points that I have been hearing for years
is it only runs
on Linux is that they haven't been able to get one of these decent packages for Linux.
Well, the Cadence they've been on Linux for quite a while now, but they're finally trying to push everybody to it now. Mm-hmm. And I can't hear myself.
Like,
in my
it's one of the one of them deals where like everybody's going. I've been hearing about it for a long time. You know, everybody complains. Oh, you know, we have such a hard. We don't want to switch to Linux because all the high-end CAD programs run on Windows.
Yep.
Is what they've been saying, right?
The AutoCAD stuff, yeah.
All the high-end CAD programs run on Windows. Well,
that's the design of the stuff. Yeah. The chip stuff has always been running on
I got
on
news
boxes.
For them anyway. You know, the high-end CAD stuff was never initially developed on Windows to begin with. It was developed on Unix.
Yes, it was. Yeah. And AutoCAD was originally on that as well.
Right. I mean, I remember using high-end CAD packages on an Apple II. Right? That dates myself.
Yeah, that dates yourself.
Does that
quite
date
a bit.
Me? Date me a little bit. I remember setting not only setting up the CAD package, but doing the first tutorials for my shop teacher on an Apple II in the shop class. And that dates me just a little bit. And speaking of dating me just a little bit, before anybody brings it up, I'll bring it up myself. Tomorrow, February 9th, is the Linkster's birthday.
Woohoo! Happy birthday!
Happy birthday to
I will be. I will have made 36 revolutions around this here sun. That little
damn youngins, I tell you.
And so I'm getting old and feeling it because I got a 12-year-old daughter, and if you got a 12-year-old daughter, you are old. Doesn't matter how old you are.
I don't know. I'm
when
42,
they hit
so.
That old, you are old. Tell you what. But
I'll be 43 in April.
43. You're just a youngin'. But that's 43 natural years because you don't have children.
Yeah.
When you have children, every year that my daughter ages,
it's like dog years.
It ages me seven, like you said, dog years. So I'm like 7 times 12 plus 36.
So you're 126?
I'm old, yeah. It's like, it's just, I'm borderline on dust. That's what it seems like. And I believe if you have multiple kids in it, that also, you have to add them together kind of thing. So somebody out there is going to say, yeah, you're right. I have kids.
But I tell you, though, I set up the printer. This was the first time I actually set up a network printer in Linux. I had this old HP DeskJet from when I bought a laptop, back in 1998, mm-hmm. and I got the printer for free, and the thing kept running, so I kept using it. I'm not going to throw a perfectly good printer away.
Yeah,
oh, sounds like our guest is here. Judd, are you in there?
Hello.
Judd, how you doing?
Good, man. I'm fashionably late, as usual.
That's okay. So are we, man. We had a little bit of a disaster here.
All right. Hey, everybody.
What happened?
This is Judd Vinet from, is it Vinet? Vinet?
It's Vinet, but I don't speak French, so you can call me Vinet if you want.
Okay.
Well, we'll say it, right? It's Judd Vinet.
From the Arch Linux.
Who is from the Arch Linux project, right?
You're the founder, right?
Yeah, accidental founder.
Everybody here is just dying to hear you tell us all about Arch Linux. And like Pat sitting across from me, he's got to be your biggest fan.
He's drooling right now.
me and Dan both converted to Arch on most of our systems. I like it, man. It's fantastic. Cool. It reminds me a little bit, we're old Slackware guys. Some of us still here are Slackware guys. Also,
that's cool. So am I.
Debian, I played a little bit with Gentoo, but Arch seems to be the best of all worlds to me.
Well, that was the intention, I kind of took everything I knew from all the distros I liked and left all the crap I didn't like behind, and that's kind of what Arch turned into in the end. As it turns out, a lot of people have the same ideals I do about Linux distros, so it worked out.
That's cool, man. Now, when you first started, did you take the code base from a different distribution?
Yeah, if Arch were said to have a father, I guess it would be Crux. I don't know if you have tried Crux, but it's really beautiful. It's that simplicity that you really want in a distro. But my problem with Crux was Per Lytton, the founder, didn't take it far enough. He had a really cool package manager called Package Utils, but it didn't do anything other than add remove packages, like no dependency resolution or anything like that. So I emailed him, and I said, do you have plans to add any of this stuff? And he said, no, he liked it where it was. It wasn't going further. So I started writing Pac-Man in C, and from there, Arch kind of formed. It was written to scratch my own itch, so I kind of wrote it as my ideal distro. And then, you know, the hundreds upon hundreds of other people came on board and started suggesting things, and now it's turned into, what you guys know as Arch.
So when was the official first release?
Let's see here. March 2002, I guess. Version 0.1, Homer, came out. And it was pretty quiet and unannounced. What's that? And that's the one.
Donuts.
That's the one. Named after my protege.
Well, it seems to be growing, man. You go on the bulletin boards, and it's very active. You go on the IRC channels, you know. Everyone's into it, and it seems to be a lot of development going on.
I think that's one of the big strengths with Arch is the community. Like, it's a very tight-knit group of people. And it's I don't know, if you look at the average age, I think it's a pretty young community, more or less. But they're all technically advanced people, which is partially due to the disclaimer we put on the About page saying you kind of got to be technically competent to try out Arch. That was kind of written on purpose because we didn't really have the time or inclination to want to support a lot of newbies. There's plenty of distros out there that cater to that niche. So once the people that know stuff join the community, we have a greater breadth of knowledge in there.
Now, when you designed Pac-Man, did you have AppGet in mind, or was it something completely different?
No, you're right. I definitely had AppGet in mind. That was the one thing I really loved. I'd never used Debian a lot. I don't know, something turned me off in the initial phases of it, way back when I started with Linux. But I used PLD, Polish Linux Distribution, for a while, and it used AppGet, but it seemed to do a lot better job of it than Debian did, maybe because there wasn't repos all over the place, and they actually updated their packages regularly, whereas Debian doesn't. But they had it was a real smooth upgrade path, like nothing ever broke. You could always upgrade. But the problem was the community wasn't really there. It's a very quiet distro. Most people haven't heard of it, and my Polish just sucks, so I couldn't really read anything. But yeah, Pac-Man definitely pulled a lot from AppGet. Like all the dist upgrade stuff that AppGet does, I was trying to mimic that with Pac-Man to keep it simpler.
You see, I was a Debian user for quite a while, and I was running Canonix, which is a Debian unstable derivative. And in itself, it's a good distro, but the last like 6 or 7 months, it seems that the Debian unstable repositories have been a complete mess, and a lot of things were breaking. It seems that Arch is pretty cutting edge as far as the packages that are available. But it doesn't seem to break so far.
You're lucky then. It does break. Trust me. I wake up many mornings to a slew of complaints when things do break. But now we've got the testing repository, so we try to do all our playing in there and wait till it's been verified it's actually working before we move it over. So the breakages are few and far between, I hope. We're getting better at that.
I mean, one of the things that really blew me away was I couldn't believe how fast KDE 3.5 was in part of the official repository.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, Gentoo is usually the winner here, the de facto winner, because you build from source, so you can, you know, optimize for your Athlon, your K7, or whatever. We only optimize for i686, but we still get pretty much all the gains you get out of Gentoo doing that, and then anybody with a P2 or higher can use it, which is great. And there are ongoing community-contributed ports for i586, BPC, and Arch64 is probably going to be an official one soon enough. Kind of coming down the pipe, multiple architecture support.
Why AMD 64 seems the most logical progression? I mean, that's where everyone's going.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, 586 is great and good, but it's, you know, more or less dead, so it's not a lot of effort going into that.
Got a question from our IRC channel here, and they want to know if you can tell them why they can't get Pac-Man to update over Wi-Fi.
That's strange. I update with my Wi-Fi card.
Yeah, I use Wi-Fi all the time. It must be a specific driver or something, or their network is set up right. Like, which Wi-Fi module are they using?
Doesn't say.
Yeah, I update with my laptop. I picked up a piece of shit Walmart $550 balanced laptop, and I slapped Arch in there, man. It rocks.
Cool. Runs smooth. Yeah, Arch is nice. It has a relatively low footprint, too, and I like the bleeding edge factor because I always love playing with the new Linux toys that come out as soon as they come out. So in that same vein, Arch is still more or less my distro. I like to put in what I like. And I don't play the leader card too often, I hope, with the other developers. But we all work along pretty well together.
One of the things that really jumped out at me once I got it up and running was how fast the system comes up. It's phenomenally quick coming up, maybe 30 seconds.
Well, it's like it's pretty much day and night when compared to Red Hat in that vein, because Red Hat likes to start up everything you may possibly need one day in your life, 10 years down the road, whereas Arch goes the opposite way, and they only start up what you should have all the time and then let you configure the rest. Again, that comes down to the main philosophy where we like to abstract the mundane details away but leave the admin with full control where they should have it. So, I mean, like we not port 22 by default. Even if you install OpenSSH, you have to edit your host.deny file in etc and comment out the deny all rule.
So you basically, you're just running with what you need, and if you need a particular service, you install it and configure it yourself.
That's right, yep. And like I said, we try to make it as smooth as possible. There's usually only one or two files you have to edit. And the wiki is getting better and better every day, so if you need anything, there's a lot of resources on there. Like if you don't know how to set up Apache or something, you can find yourself a wiki page there. And the community, like I said, they're great. There's not, I mean, there's the odd guy that's going to shout RTFM in every question that comes up, but he's just having a bad day or something. Like most of the people on there are quite helpful.
The other thing that jumped out at me was how everything is all laid out. It's very simple and straightforward. It was very refreshing. I didn't have to go digging, you know, 20 different places to set up, you know, basic service. You know,
Good. That was definitely one of our intentions there. My day job, more or less, is contract work, PHP, web programming, a lot of SQL stuff, and a lot of sysadmin, so I babysit a lot of boxes. And I didn't want to have to trudge through a lot of documents to learn my stuff, so I figured why not roll my own distro where I know how everything works and try to make it as simple as possible so everyone else can learn how it works, too. And it worked out. I mean, as a lot of open source distros and projects are, documentation was sort of an afterthought, so I still see us having some need for improvement there. The install guide is pretty good, but it only covers the mainstream. Like, you don't have the more esoteric install methods documented yet. But the resident experts are always around in IRC to help navigate people through that.
My systems, you know, the two systems that I have Arch installed on, they're very quick and very responsive. Do you guys do a lot of patching to the kernel as well as the main applications?
No, we're a vanilla distro more or less. Like I didn't actually build Arch from Crux. I used Crux as a model. Crux has a build system very similar to BSD ports, which is why users who use the Arch build system will see its similarity to FreeBSD's port system. That reason is because a lot of people that work with Arch now are FreeBSD fans, so we try to combine the good parts about BSD into the Arch. That's why we use BSD style init scripts, but we keep all the functions in the rc.d directory as a sysv system would have, because that's also handy. And we make the output look a lot better. I don't know. BSD scripts by default, like Slackware and the startup BSDs, they all seem to have kind of ugly output when it boots up. Now, that's not really a big priority with Linux distros, but I like the aesthetics of having a little bit of color there.
It's very clean when it comes up.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, for the most part, we don't patch anything. We keep it real clean. I started it from a Linux from scratch, the book, I guess, oh God, what version was it? 2 or 3 probably when I built it. And I just used their patches, what they had, and most of their patches were just to fill security holes or to make the damn thing build if it didn't build with the newest version of GCC, which is a problem when you're on the bleeding edge, right? Like GCC4 comes out or something, and you have to find patches all over the internet to make everything build with it. It's kind of a routine problem we have, but we have some smart people.
Now, the Pacman repositories, the amount of applications that are available are pretty extensive. If I had to say the percentage of what I run daily, I would say probably maybe 85 to 90% of what I need is on there. Then you go to the AUR repository, and that's pretty much almost everything else. You know, off the top of my head, I think I had to maybe compile one or two applications from source code.
Oh, cool. Did you try out make package and the whole package build thing?
Sure.
Or did you just build them?
I tried both ways. I also tried the automatic builder that someone created. AUR build. That works pretty well too.
Yeah, it's really neat. You get kind of that warm, fuzzy feeling when you see a lot of people contributing stuff through the forums, all these scripts and things that we've never even thought about. It's really great.
So that's
kind of the driving force. I mean, no one gets paid for this stuff, right? So all you get is that warm, fuzzy kudos feeling and the joy of working with these people I'll probably never meet in real life.
It seems as far as package contributions, it's pretty wide open. I mean, if you don't see something that's in there and you're looking for it, you can create the package yourself and contribute. And it'll get used. And I guess, what's the number of, like, you can go and vote on packages that people have put together, the package builds, and I guess once it hits a certain number, it'll get included into the regular repository?
That's right, yep. Yeah, a couple of the Arch developers were the brains behind the AUR, and it's been a great project, really successful so far. The problem was we found that the Arch developers were a bottleneck for package inclusion. We're a relatively small group. We're probably 15 to 20 people right now in the core, and we just don't have the resources to take every package everybody wants. So they built this system, which is vote-based, so once the votes exceed a certain threshold, they're actually adopted in, and that allows us to use the community to vote on which packages are worthy of our time and which ones aren't. And the ones that aren't, they can sit in the AUR, so they're still generally accessible to the rest of the people. And it works out. The AUR has more packages than the official trees now, which is great. So I don't know what that brings us up to, $2,000 to $4,000. Nowhere near Debian, of course, but...
Still pretty good, though.
Yeah, we're doing all right. And that'll balloon again once we start supporting multiple architectures and things. Frugalware, one of the forks, well, it's not a direct fork of Arch, but it uses Pac-Man. They support multiple architectures with Pac-Man now, so the functionality is more or less in place. We just have to start using.
Now, as far as the AUR, I guess, or even the regular repositories, does it get to a point where the package is pretty old and no one's maintaining it? I mean, do you guys keep an orphan list, and does that get addressed at any point?
Yeah, in the early days, I hacked up, there's a web development area, and online, like, if there's an official package, you can go in there, any user, and you can flag it out of date. And what that does is it notifies the maintainer, and it's sitting in his list of things to do, so he can go in there. We have a package to-do list. Like recently I had to rebuild OpenLDAP, and there was a soname increase. So like the library version jumped up, so everything that linked to it would need a rebuild. So what we do is we create these package to-do lists, and each developer has their own their list of packages they need to rebuild. And most of them are pretty good. We get the odd guy who like might disappear off the face of the planet for a while or something, but the community is such a meritocracy that we can just bring in somebody else to replace him if that ever does happen.
Do you have any idea how many users are using Arch?
It's tough. I wish I did. I really wish I knew. But there's so many mirrors and stuff, I can't even really get valid download statistics or anything. Rather than waiting, looking on the forums, we have about 5,000 people on the official forums, but I don't think that's a representative number because I run into a lot of people that say, hey, I've heard of Arch, it's cool, but they don't really participate in the community. So it's tough to say.
Now, as far as releases, you guys are into the rolling release where the packages get rolled forward. You know, once you have the system up and running, you can update it any time. I guess you guys are going to do periodic snapshot releases, like 071 Noodle.
We had one of our little developer meetings on IRC a few weeks or a month ago or so, and we decided people get kind of itchy when you don't release in 8 months or so. Even though they don't understand that the nature of the rolling release system, you don't really need to release that often because most of our stuff is coming from the servers, not from the CD itself. Which makes a lot of sense, since there's new packages out every single day. But we're going to move to quarterly releases, I think. We're going to do minor ones. So the next one would be around April, and it would be 0.7.2. And then every four or so, we'll do a major jump to 0.8.9, and then the Zenith 1.0. And hopefully that will kind of assuage some of these guys who are get itchy.
What were some of the big changes from 0.7.0 to 0.7.1?
Well, that's why it was a minor thing. There weren't a lot of big changes. We moved from the kernel uses an initial RAM disk now, which caused a lot of kerfuffle in the beginning because a lot of people were scared. People fear what they don't know, especially if it's kernel related. And a lot of people would post on the forums with broken systems and stuff. So that scared more people off. But things have smoothed down since. That necessitated a new installation because it made the upgrade path from 0.7 to 0.1 quite a lot more difficult. And that's kind of what we're hoping to help with the more periodic releases, is we can start timing these large changes better and say, okay, we got a CD coming out in about 3 weeks. Now's a good time to put in a new feature that can use that.
The other thing about having releases, periodically is it kind of lets you advertise Arch a little bit to different people that might not have been.
It will help the PR for sure. Like DistroWatch is a great site for stuff like that, but you'll notice right now they're. Arch has a happy green arrow next to it, climbing up in the rankings, but that's just because we've had releases lately. A newsletter just came out. If derivatives come out, Arch also benefits. Frugalware, Archie the Live CD, he was a great work by a couple guys who've been in the community for a long time.
Yeah, we're familiar with Archie. We've spoken to him.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Nice.
And have you seen Underground Desktop? That's another derivative.
Yes. Yes, I have. I haven't used it yet. I like to try these things out every once in a while, but I recently lost my test box. So I have a garage that's a growing graveyard of dead computers, so I'm kind of going to have to resort to virtualization and Zen and stuff now to try these.
Now that is the mark of a true geek. A room full of dead computer hardware. That's how we know you're the real deal, because that reminds me of me, and it reminds me of all the junk that I'm sitting around in Dan's room, too.
So. Dan's room is a graveyard.
Yeah. I guess going forward, I mean, do you guys have any vision where you want to go with the distribution? Is there any needs that need to be addressed?
It's a common question, but you know what? To be perfectly honest, I don't really have a big vision here. Like I said, it started out as to be my ideal distro, and once I got there, I didn't really know where to take it next. People often ask, well, are you going to try to monetize it somehow? Are you going to make some money? But to be honest, I'm not really a business guy. I'm a coder and at heart, and I don't know how to monetize it properly. So I get the odd email of people. They come to me and say, I'd like to do a partnership or something, but most of them fall through. It's just talk at this point. But as we near 1.0 and start gaining a little more notoriety, I think it's possible that we could maybe, you know, leverage it for contract work or something. As I said, I do sysadmin stuff, so it may help look good on the old CV if I say I wrote my own distro and know how to maintain it. So.
Can't hurt, man.
But as far as where we're going, you know, I think we're just going to keep doing what we're doing and try to do it right and improve on the areas that need it. We have a good feedback stream with the community, so we kind of know what they want and what they don't want. And we try to pay attention to them as often as we can. They're very vocal about not wanting the initial RAM disk, but we were pretty adamant, so we pushed it through anyway, and in the end, we kind of reconciled. Everyone was happy with it.
What are the benefits of switching over to RAM disk?
Well, like I said, I like playing with new toys. Encrypted root file systems you can do, things like that. Like you, normally, you wouldn't be able to because you have a race there. You can't use the crypt setup binary if it's on your root file system or something like that. Whereas with the initial RAM disk, you put it in there and on your special separate boot partition so it can be read without being decrypted. And then from there, you can use that to access your encryption. Or things like one kernel for any sort of hardware configuration. Before, we had a kernel with all the SCSI drivers built in, and we had a kernel with all the IDE stuff but no SCSI. This started out because SCSI drivers are breaking some IDE systems. They would probe forever and basically hang the kernel on boot, so we had to do the split. But now that we have this dynamic initRD generation and all the new fancy hardware auto-detection stuff that's come in, a user installs the kernel and it scans his PCI bus and everything else in his machine and determines which modules are necessary to boot up. So, like, I might have a VIA controller or something, so it'll install the VIA82CXXX module for me. And this is all done without the user's intervention, which is really smooth.
So from a maintenance standpoint, it makes things a little more manageable.
That's right. Again, it abstracts away one of the details you shouldn't really have to deal with. A lot of users were upset that we were trying to do hardware auto-detection, but that's because they have a very negative view of it. If it actually works, and what we're doing is just exploiting features within the kernel. You know, we're not writing fancy routines or anything that are trying to guess your hardware. We're just taking what the kernel tells us and loading those modules. So far, it's worked really well. It's a relatively new feature, actually. I don't know if you guys are aware of the SysFS system. Everything that shows up in there has what's called a mod alias now, and that points to the correct module in your libmodules directory. So all you have to do is cap this file as you would any proc or sys file, and then load the module it tells you. Super simple.
Sounds cool, man.
What's your short-term vision for your distribution, your Linux distribution? What do you want to see happening with it within the next 6 months or so?
I'd like to start delegating more. I'd like a little more organization within the development community. So if I want to take off, if I want to go traveling or try a new line of work for a while, Arch won't suffer because of my absence. That's a big one for me. Or if I get hit by a bus, or for anything for that matter. So I want some more organization there. And I think we could redo the install environment a little bit. I like the console-based installer. I want to keep that. But it's written in Bash right now, and it can't do some cool things like LVM or software RAID installs. If you're a wizard, you can do it manually. We've made that real easy, and I've done it countless times. But for the person that isn't really comfortable with it, there's no functionality there, and that's something I'd like to add. So we've got a couple guys that are going to help us out with that. We're trying to kind of, right now, the developer team is more or less willy-nilly. Everybody takes what they're good at and they do it. But we need more devoted teams, like an installation team, a release engineering team, a testing team. And this has been in the works for the last year or so, but it hasn't really got going for lack of motivation on my own part.
So if we get some volunteers to help you out with your testing and stuff like that, who should they contact and where, actually?
They can contact me, Judd at archlinux.org, or they can contact Jason at Arch. And, just tell us what we need to know is your hardware profile, like what kind of machinery you have, what's in it, what kind of cards, Ethernet, SATA controllers, all that stuff. And we're looking for diverse hardware configurations because the problem right now is I am the sole release engineer. So what I do is I roll an ISO. I make sure it works on all my hardware, which is low-grade IDE stuff. And then I send it out to a few developers who have more exotic hardware, and they try it. But that's it. Like, I don't know if it's going to work for this controller or that controller because I don't have them. So we're hoping to get a team of people, and then we send it out and say, okay, two-week release time, run it, see if it works, and then get back to us.
And you won't turn away donations of hardware, too, right?
Yeah. Well, hardware itself, we're trying to upgrade. We host right now at EV1. Costs us like $100 a month U.S., which isn't too bad at all. Donations cover that quite well. But dragging the server goes down quite a bit just because we're getting more popular and people start. Some guy decides to use HT track and pull down the entire wiki or something, so Apache goes nuts and starts thrashing. So, as you guys probably know. So what we're going to do is we got one company, a developer there. He works there. They're going to donate a server, and another developer works for an ISP down there. So he's going to donate the T1, and hopefully we won't have to pay this monthly fee business anymore. And that will allow us to actually get a second server, probably somewhere in Europe, for all the community stuff.
Now, you're Canadian. Do you get a lot of Americans, Canadians, Europeans, Australians? What seems to be the breakdown? Do you have any idea?
Well, developer-wise, which I have a greater handle on than the user base, is mostly Europe-centric, believe it or not. There's a few guys in the States, for sure. Another guy I used to work with, Jason, in Canada here, in Victoria, where I am. And then a whole ton of people in the Netherlands, in Germany, in France, all that stuff, in Switzerland. So we have a lot of people over there, which really helps for PR work, too. As I said, I'm unilingual, so I don't speak a lot of other languages. So if there's people come in and they have a problem, they don't have a grasp of the English language, these guys can really help. I'm assuming the general user base is somewhat similar. We do have a lot of Canadians from BC here or out east, Montreal, Quebec area, but not nearly as many as we have Europeans and Americans. I guess localization, too, was kind of a secondary thought for me because it was designed for me initially and I'm speaking other languages, so I think that might turn off some people that are primarily other language users. But we're working on it. We have a guy who's dubbed himself the internationalization engineer, so he's going to take care of it.
Now, you guys obviously need more bandwidth, more mirrors. As far as developers and testers and package maintainers, is there any one need that stands out that you're looking to get more people involved?
Nobody wants to write docs. It's just a fact of life. It's we get a couple guys that want to write docs, and they're just so busy with other work. Like, a lot of us are or were students. I'm not anymore, but a lot of the developers are students, so their time comes and goes with exams and midterms and things like that. But nobody really wants to sit down and actually write the documentation. So it usually either it falls to me or it just doesn't get done. So that was kind of where the wiki came in. We saw how successful it had been for Gen 2 and other people, and we're like, well, let's throw up a wiki and let anyone create the docs. And so far it's been working really well. It doesn't really count as official documentation per se, but it's just as useful. Everyone that comes in usually starts as a package maintainer just because that's what most of the work is. You know, there's thousands of packages, and the day-to-day changes, that's what they are, the package updates. So what we normally do is we keep an eye on the community and the forums, the IRC channel, the AUR contributions. There's a group of users called trusted users, and what they are, they're not core developers, but they're trusted to update packages and not put Trojans in them or anything like that. And what we do is we find someone who has the time and inclination and then kind of bring them up, so to speak, as they would in the major league or something. Offer them a job, and if they take it, then they get all the benefits, zero pay and lots of stress.
Switching gears, as far as the installer, what has been some of the feedback regarding the installer? Has it been positive, some mixed reviews?
Surprisingly positive, I would have to say. I love the console stuff. You know, if I had my way, there's a quick install script that actually comes with Arch, and it bypasses the dialog-based installer entirely. It's all command line. That's what I use all the time. But people really like the console stuff because a lot of these guys are coming from Slack or Gentoo or other ones that have kind of a dialog or text-based installer, and they're really comfortable with that. Surprisingly, few people actually like Anaconda and the point-and-click kind of a style. I guess that's because of the type of people we attract to Arch, too. I mean, we're not really user-friendly distribution, so people don't expect any coddling when they start.
I like the fact that you just install a very minimal packages, very basic system, and then you build from there. I mean, it's somewhat similar to how Gentoo does it, where, you know, you have a very minimal system and you build whatever you need, but it doesn't take a year and a day for everything to compile and install.
That's right. For those of us that can't afford dual 2.4 gig Xeon, you know, Arch is a better option.
Yep, I hear you, man.
But, yeah, Pac-Man does the work there for us. It's done a pretty good job. I mean, it has its failings for sure, but we've started more of a federated development model on Pac-Man 3.0. It's going to have a proper library, ALPM. It'll be called the Arch Linux Package Management Library. And then that'll allow easier front-end integration for because a lot of other distros have started to adopt Pac-Man, so it's not just Arch's ideals Pac-Man has to meet anymore. It has to do other things. So we can cater to the user-friendly side of the people by creating this library, and then people create these elegant front-ends. The amazing part is a lot of people have created elegant front-ends without the library. There's one called Jackman, which is unfortunately written in Java, in my opinion. I don't like Java, but it's beautiful. It's a really nice, neat, and well-done package manager.
I tried that. And it was kind of—I thought it was kind of slow. It was kind of hanging on me a little bit. I wasn't crazy about it.
Java. Yeah.
It looked nice, though.
Yeah.
So, do you plan on having an unofficial, Synaptic-like GUI front end for Pac-Man?
We mentioned that once, and I had the—it was basically they ripped my head off, more or less, on the forums. No one wanted it. Like they said they came to Arch because it didn't rely on GUIs at all. And I was more than happy to meet them there because I don't really like GUIs myself. But there are enough people that want the GUI where it will show up probably in Extra or somewhere else. There are already front ends there. But the beauty of Arch is if you don't like it, don't use it, right? Pac-Man is still going to be the standard. So if you don't like a GUI, just don't complain about it. Don't use it.
Command line's quicker and it's easier. And once you learn it, it's real simple.
Exactly. I mean, that's the whole idea with Arch. A lot of people send me, the majority of the kudos I get are coming from people that have used Linux for 1 or 2 years. They're really dissatisfied with Mandriva or whatever it's going to be called tomorrow. And then they say, I've learned a lot. I've learned a whole ton about Linux just from your documentation and the need to learn because Arch doesn't have those GUI utilities. So it's kind of cool. We're helping people to become more, you know, competent in Linux. And the great part is the skills you take from Arch are applicable to other distros. Like at the command line, most distros are kind of the same except for the location of the configuration file. So we're teaching people stuff they can actually use when they move on, if they move on, of course.
Well, then it's a good thing that you use the BSD-style configuration files because, you know, that's what people should learn anyway instead of that, yeah, System 5 crap.
Oh, God, that SysV stuff scares me. I started Linux in 98. Red Hat, and I, you know, anything was better than Windows, so it was great. But once I started looking around and realized there was better options out there, I found Slackware and kind of never looked back. Slack was great, and I really like the one configuration file stuff. So we try to keep that with etcrc.com. Mm-hmm. You know, very BSD-ish. You go in there and it's just Bash. You know, most of Arch is Bash. The package, all the package maintenance stuff, it's pure Bash, which is nice.
Bash is good.
Yeah.
Link's got to try it, man. I think he's gonna like it. He's hardcore Slackware.
If you like Slackware, I think you'll like it. It's basically Slackware with a few frills. You know, it takes care of the parts of the Slackware you didn't want to deal with. You don't have to go on linuxpackages.net and hunt down all the dependencies and stuff like that.
That's how I view it, man. To me, I like Slackware when I was running it. To me, the weakness I felt was that it didn't have an official package management system like apt-get. I know there's Swaret, there's slapget. You know, people use them. For the most part, they work okay, but they're not official.
Yeah. The officiality is a big part. And that's why I think people have this problem with RPM hell, you know. Like, RPM itself is probably a decent package manager, but when you have 18 distros all rolling their own packages with RPM and you try to mix and match, you're going to run into a lot of dependency troubles. Arch kind of, we still have a very centralized community, and our package repositories are very centralized. So if it's built against a certain version, we know it.
I mean, Judd, you talk about RPM hell. I think a lot of the Debian-based distros are kind of feeling that effect now. You know, you got Nepis, you got Ubuntu, you got Canonix. I mean, some of them work better.
Debian proper and any of the 1,900 other offshoots of Debian, too.
Like Ubuntu especially. They're notorious for having their own versions of the packages. I mean, yeah, it's good. They do customization, and then they pass the changes upstream. But if
right.
you're trying to maintain a system, it gets really crazy if, you know, you forget, you know, you start using non-official repositories mixed in with your official repositories. You go and you try to do, you know, a disk upgrade, and your system's a complete mess.
Yeah, we've all been down that road. I've been down that road a lot. That's why I took to starting. Like, originally it was just I was building things from source, and then I realized, well, I'm doing the exact same build of PHP for these 13 servers. So really what I should do is automate it, and that's kind of how MakePackage started out. It's basically just a little bash file that tells the script where to get the source, how to configure it, and how to install it, and then the rest is just every time you want it, you run MakePackage. There's a MakeWorld script, too, in case you're really weird and you want to rebuild your entire distro from source.
Do you have binary packages, too? I mean, I'm sorry, I haven't had the chance to try the distribution yet.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, we're all binary, actually. The source part is an afterthought. Like, every package we have, you can find a package build. Basically, it's the equivalent to an RPM spec file, mm-hmm. the file that tells you how to build the package. But if you look at one of them, it's very simple. You can find one. If you go to archlinux.org, there's going to be a box on the upper left side that has all the recent package updates. If you click on one of those, and you click View CVS Entries from there, you can see one of these package builds. They're very simple.
Here's an odd question for you. I was going through your website today, reading a bit about the distribution and how you do things with this. And I decided to go off exploring, and I went and looked in your logo files, your logo uh-huh. graphics. What the hell is the noodle about? Like, I keep seeing this macaroni noodle hanging out in there. I don't know what the hell it's for.
Yeah, I was worried people see him as some sort of phallic representation or something. Read too much into it. The last one, we had never planned on kind of assigning these little logos or, like, these little mascots or anything to it, but 0.7 had been dubbed Wombat. I can't remember by which Arch developer did it. And then he found a picture of a wombat and threw it up, and all of a sudden this thing was all over the place on all the reviews. You know, your KDE login screen has a picture of a wombat in front of it and stuff like that. So once we announced the tag name Noodle, which was in honor of an intelligent design and our lord, the flying spaghetti monster, We realized we needed another mascot of sorts, and so some guy started doing up a bunch of drawings, and that's what it turned into. Of course, now that the pressure's on, you know, the next one we name, we have to come up with another mascot.
A noodle mascot. Work. Go for a meatball. Meatballs are good. It's a meatball. And also, on your next release, you have to make sure that you fix your default web browser settings so that when they pull it up, they automatically get tlls.org.
Yeah, that's in a critical severity in the bug tracker right now.
It should be. You know, of all the distributions we have reviewed on this show and the famous people, and by the way, you know, you're becoming absolutely world famous now since you're on the show, right? The famous people that we have talked to on this show, not one of them has taken my suggestion yet and made sure that, you know, TLLTS pops up as a default entry, you know, on their web browser or in their IRC channel or something, you know. A way to thank us. And we don't get any swag either here, and that's really disappointing, right? I'm busting on you.
They might flame me alive if I actually change the default settings. People are really picky about that, but you guys are definitely going to be getting some traffic from the Arch forum.
Yeah, man, we at least have Patrick. To be a bookmark, right?
Oh,
you guys have backed
me
up, right? Hell yeah. We need to have at least a bookmark.
What you guys need to do is write a 2-paragraph review about Arch saying it doesn't suck, and then I can put you in the press page.
I've done reviews. Dan as well. Dan was one of our guys there. He went out there.
Yeah,
he's in Las Vegas. He does some work on the side for somebody, and he's at a convention doing some research and setup and whatever. So,
picking up hookers in Vegas.
Yeah, he's at the Olympic Gardens. The Deja.
Of course, what else do you do in Vegas?
Shoot guns and go to titty bars.
That's right.
And gamble.
Whiskey.
Yeah, gambling. I can't afford to lose money, so I'll just stick to the titty bars and the whiskey.
If you have enough whiskey, you don't even need to go to the titty bar. That's, you know.
Well, speak for yourself, my friend. But getting back on track, though, I've been running Arch on two systems, and I love it.
How do we get off track with titty bars?
Las Vegas. But Arch is fantastic, man. I'm really liking
it. Titty bars, Linux, go hand.
Yeah, and beer, right?
Linux and boobies. It's two things that you just can't, I mean, you know, they go so well together.
But Arch is fantastic, man. I love it as a workstation. If I set up another server, I'm going to give it a spin as a server setup. I'm sure it works fine.
Yeah, give it a shot as a server. Like, that's one of the main uses I have for it, and it works really well. Like, the simple, smooth upgrades, you kind of know what you're getting each time, too. Definitely don't go near testing if you're going to run it on servers, because we do play around in there a lot. And keep an eye when Pacman says it's replaced a configuration file or something. The most recent version has a much more friendly policy on that. It will never replace a configuration file if it's been changed at all in any way, so you're not going to get too screwed by that. But you still got to keep an eye on it. It's not one of those start upgrading and walk away and come back and hope everything works.
I had one little issue, and I went to the forum, and I saw the solution. It was not a big deal.
Yeah, if we make a little bug or something, there was one about we had a cyclical dependency between MDNS and NSS and Avahi, I think.
Yeah, that was the one.
Yeah, that's the one. Well, everybody has the same problem, right? And they all go to the same places for an answer, so all it takes is one guy to figure it out, which is nice.
And the only other thing that I had was when I did a system upgrade, it upgraded my kernel, and I'm running Lilo, and I didn't realize that the kernel got upgraded. So I got I got a nice kernel panic, but it's no big deal. I just used the boot disk, you know, change rooted and reran Lilo. No big deal.
Yeah. Not a Grub fan, huh? Have you ever tried Grub?
I was using Grub for a while. I wanted to go back to Lilo just to see where it was at. I mean, for the most part, it really hasn't changed much.
No, it's pretty much the same as it is going to get, I think, from this point on. It's kind of handy for certain setups, but I really like Grub as a general booter. It's quite nice. I was a big Lilo fan for the longest time, too, but it was one of those things I didn't want to try Grub because I just knew Lilo so well, and I stick with what I know for the most part, but Grub won me over pretty quickly. It's just so much cool stuff you can do from the boot line, whereas with Lilo, you're kind of screwed, in your case specifically. If you forget to rerun it every time you upgrade the kernel, you're kind of hooped.
Now, one thing I noticed was there was a community version of the kernel.
Yeah. ArchCK is done by James Rayner. He lives down under, and he does a terrific job from what I hear. Gentoo Boys actually is office too, so you can get the ArchCK kernel in Gentoo if you want. And it's based on CK, Concolivus, all his patch stuff, except James has added a few other little tweaks here and there, and apparently it works really well performance-wise. I have yet to try it. Again, I kind of stick with the stock kernel because I feel bad if I'm not eating my own dog food, so to speak.
James does the Archie kernel, the Archie live CD, right?
James does help with the Archie CD, too, yeah.
Yeah.
He's a pretty prolific guy.
We talked to him, I think, right?
Oh, cool.
I think we did.
Last year, yeah.
I think we did last year, yeah. All right, so give us a rundown on your personal desktop setup. You know, we need to know all the standard questions via Emacs, what kind of window manager you like to run, all of that stuff. Of course, you're running Slackware, right?
Yeah.
He used to.
Something very close to Slackware. Arch. But no, I have two really craptastical 17-inch monitors for my main desktop, so I have two video cards in there. A slew of A-terms, all tiled out, and focus follows mouse, because all tabbing and stuff is ghetto. I use Screen, GNU Screen, for everything almost. I really love my console apps, so I use Mutt for email. I use IRSSI for IRC. I use Center ICQ for all my IM. And that allows me to jump around, because I have computers strewn all over this house. I've lost some of them at this point. And a laptop, so I like to jump around, but I don't want to lose state. And Screen has this gorgeous feature where you can detach the entire thing and reattach from another computer, right, which is awesome. And otherwise, what do I use? XFCE4. I use them.
Yes.
I used to use one, but XFCE4 is just so smooth and feature-rich for its size, its footprint.
Yes, you guys listening to this stuff, right? This guy is smart. Listen to him, right? Go ahead, XFCE. Go ahead.
GNOME is just too slow, and KDE is great for someone that, you know, is coming from Windows or something. But if you're a Linux kind of guy, XFCE4 is where it's at. And they're doing some new cool things coming down the pipe, too. I'm looking forward to the next version. For one thing, the file manager, I don't think they're going to improve it, I hear. They're going to have a better calendar app instead of that little afterthought where you click on the time in the lower right corner and pops up a plain calendar.
Yeah,
they're
and it doesn't even pop up in the right damn date. You know that? I like the app. It just pisses me off because it doesn't pop up with today's date automatically.
No, it popped up with the date that it was when you started up your XFCE4 session. So
right,
if
which
you booted up on Monday,
a month
that's
ago,
what the date
yeah.
And, of course, with the phenomenal uptimes Arch users get, you know, it's never on the right day.
Do you ever get together with your developers, your core guys, or it's strictly distributed over the net?
Mostly collaborated over the net. I would love to get together with people more. We had a strong showing at a Linux Tag last year in Germany. Jason, the guy from Victoria here, he flew over there, but I just couldn't foot the airfare. I'm swimming in student loan debt right now. So there was probably 8 to 10 Arch developers over there and a whole bunch of people. They gave out 300 or 400 Arch CDs. They had a bunch of test terminals set up so people could see it in action. It was great. A couple of the guys are trying to pull together everybody to go again this year, but I don't see a lot of commitment yet.
You guys going to make it to the World Expo in Boston?
I would love to. The same guy who's donating hardware says it's about five grand for a booth, apparently, for the one we need.
Well,
and
if
he's trying to
we're getting a booth this year for the first time in Boston. If any of the Arch guys want to come over, if they have some CDs
you
want to distribute,
you want to hang out, pass out a couple.
You're more
CDs
than welcome to come by
right.
and hang out with us and leave them on a desk, and we'll give them out with our stuff as well.
Hey, cool! I'll actually mention that. I think we have one or two developers from Boston, so I'll pass it their way. Tell them to go down and say hi to you guys.
Absolutely, man.
Tell them to bring swag.
Of course.
Lots of CDs. So what do you do in your free time, Judd? I see you're a musician, right? You play guitar?
I don't like to tell people that because then they'll ask me to play or expect me to be good. But, yeah, I've played for about 4 years now, probably about the same amount of time Arch has been around, actually. I guess in 2002 I was getting pretty bored and decided to start some stuff I couldn't finish. So now I play guitar and I run Arch. I live in a house. I'm a student. I was a student. I graduated about 2 years ago from UVic here at the university with a CS degree, so... Now I sit around, and I, when I'm not working from home or something, I play guitar. We have a drum kit in the living room. All the other roommates play music. So we come home from the bar at 2 a.m. drunk and make a whole lot of noise. You
cool.
Pretend rock stars. The neighbors hate us. It's awesome.
What kind of music are you into?
I'm kind of a bit of an indie slut right now. A lot of people hear indie, and they're like, oh, he's one of those scenesters that wears a sports coat with his hoodie and stuff and shows up and tries to look all depressed at bars. I don't really follow the scene, but I like the music, and I like that aspect of it. I do a lot of recording with Linux. I'll use Ardor and Jack and Rose Garden and stuff like that. So it's really fun to be able to play with all this stuff without having to shell out the money for Pro Tools or Reason or all these expensive stuff.
And, you know, I keep looking at that this indie music thing, which is a whole big thing, and I probably would start listening to indie music, but I really don't get into, like, the headdresses and feathers and all that, you know. The tom-toms
yeah,
and the tomahawks.
You gotta go for the music. Ignore the scene. And I was raised on Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin, so I listened to a lot of that stuff too. Big classic rock guy.
Yeah, I was in a progressive rock band for a bunch of years, and I'm all into
oh,
that
you?
Stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, we were like very into like Floyd and Yes and Rush, and then we started getting
okay.
and then we started getting more into like the heavier stuff like Maiden, Priest, Metallica. And
yes.
It was good times, man. A lot of good times.
Cool. What did you play?
I play bass.
Oh, cool. Bass player. Right on.
It's just what he's looking for. Go.
Hey, if we ever get together, yeah. We'll jam.
That's right. I'll learn a few songs. I'll learn some Rush tunes for you.
Yeah,
you
why
learn
not?
Some of Marmy indie stuff for me. We'll meet halfway.
No problem, man. So do you want to say anything else to our listeners and the Arch community and the Linux community?
Nothing much, but thanks a lot for being there and giving me a reason to get up in the morning and actually work on something. Like I said, in one of the reasons for creating Arch on the main document is it was a reason for me to, or a way for me to give something back to the community. I was always one of those many people that used all the open source stuff, but I didn't feel like I was contributing back, and I had somewhat of a skill set there where I could. Arch provided that opportunity for me. But what makes it work is the community, really. I mean, we could all sit around and develop till our hair falls out, but unless people want to use it and like it, it doesn't mean a damn thing. So a big thanks to the community.
You're doing a great job, Judd. And the rest of you guys
thanks.
That you work Bye. With and everybody who I've dealt with on the bulletin boards has been very nice and helpful, and it's good people, man.
I tell you what,
oh,
it must
good.
Be. Yeah, even though I have not had a chance to try it yet because I've been so damn busy at work, the fact that both Dan and Patrick have tried it and you know constantly speak about it says volumes about it for me. So it must be some good stuff. So I'm just going to go on record and advocate it myself.
Give it a shot. If you have troubles, you can yell at me via email. I'm pretty used to it by now. So I do a lot of personal support for people if they can find my email address, which is emblazoned on the bottom of the page. I haven't hidden it very well.
Judd, you're more than welcome to come back at any time if you want to just pop in for a few minutes or you want to talk longer. You know, we have an open door for you.
Oh, that'd be great. I like your guys' show. I didn't even know about it until I was invited on, but now I listen every week. It's an excellent product.
Awesome.
We have some fun.
It's a great job. It does sound like it.
In between technical difficulties and drinking beer.
Oh, no, the server wasn't running Arch, was it?
No. Actually, we stream out live. We use Dynabolic, which is a live CD.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of it.
It's a very good one, but the problem is it really does not work at all if you don't have your interface, if you don't have your Ethernet card configured correctly.
If you don't have an IP address, it's not going to work for you.
Yeah, makes it impossible to stream to another computer when you don't have Ethernet. It's just
that'll be a catch. Sounds like a PEPCAC error.
Hey, one quick question. You're from British Columbia, right?
That's right.
Do you know all those locations where they film Battlestar Galactica and Stargate? It seems like all the Sci-Fi Channel shows are all filmed up there now.
I didn't know they filmed those up here, actually.
Yeah. I think
there's
a college up there that seems to be used quite a bit. Do you watch those shows at all or no?
I love Battlestar Galactica, yeah, but I download. I mean, buy. I buy, yeah.
I buy, yeah. BitTorrent.
I buy mine from the same place you get yours.
But, yeah, I try to keep up with it. It's a great show. I watched Lost for a while, too. It was all right. But Battlestar Galactica has really taken off, and I hear Time voted it TV show of the year. So.
Yes.
Good stuff, man. Anything else?
I don't think so, guys, unless you got some more questions.
I think we're good. Let me see if anybody's got any more quick questions
anybody
on IRC.
Anybody have any quick questions
before
on
we let
IRC?
You go?
The weird part about asking it is I can ask if anybody has any questions on IRC, but it's like 2 minutes until anybody responds.
I know.
We have such a big lag,
delay.
You know?
We're going through growing pains ourselves, you know. We're starting to hit the bandwidth barrier, you know.
Again.
Oh, yeah. You guys need some corporate sponsorship.
We need broadband.
You know, we would corporate sponsorship would be great, but the fact that, you know, we say shit and
fuck,
talk about boobs and things like that, you know,
right,
just to keep going and drink beer, some people have a problem with that. I don't know what the problem is, but
it tends to keep General Mills away from us.
Yeah, right. No, but you think like a Linux company, hey, they would go right for that, right? Because, you know, like the mod freeze and beer, right, and everything, but no, they don't.
Yeah, we're going to be working it, man. Don't worry.
They don't want to do it, so, you know, piss on them.
Judd, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. We really appreciate it, man. You guys have a fantastic distro. Keep up the good work.
Yep. Great interview.
Thanks
and
a lot.
We really hope that you will consider giving us some of your time again to keep us updated on how things are going with Arch and what's going on and what we can expect and when things are coming.
Hey, I'd love to. It's been a pleasure. A lot of fun.
Take care.
All right, guys. Bye.
Thanks.
Good night.
Good night.
All right, everybody. That was Judd Binet from Arch Linux.
Good guy, man.
Good stuff. Good. You know, I really have to. I'm going to have to buckle down and try the distribution.
You would like
is,
it, man. You really would.
And you know what? I bet I would because, you know, I really dig getting the command line stuff, and I like distributions that are fast. That's one of the things that keeps me rolling back to Slack.
It's fast.
Is that I have to have. Yeah, you know, like he said, he mentioned the stuff with Red Hat. Like, it loads every freaking service known to man, right? Something you might need to have, like, 45 years down the road. I don't like that. I want my stuff to be absolutely as trimmed down, as pared down, as fast as possible. So
that's
it sounds
what,
like...
That's what you need.
Yeah, it sounds like that. And well, that's another topic for a different time. But it sounds like that's the kind of thing he's got going on, so I'm sure I would like it. The only bad part is, like, I live in a little apartment. Right? And I don't have... You guys have seen my place. I've got like 30 computers in there now.
Yeah, but
there's no freaking
you're
place.
You're using computers as furniture.
Yeah.
You use it for heating equipment.
There's no freaking place anywhere for me to try Arch Linux on anything except my old laptop that I just got more RAM for. Maybe I can try it there and that'll be a good thing. Oh, what do you think? Oh, 400 megahertz Dell?
Yeah, if you're running like XFCE.
256 megs of RAM. I would, of course, run XFCE. XFCE is the best window manager out there, man.
You gave up on Fluxbox?
No, Fluxbox is good too, but that's like a really, really low resource kind of thing. If you want, like XFCE is a low resource desktop environment. All right. Fluxbox is a window manager. All right, because there's like a few extra programs. Window environment, it implies some kind of extra functionality and integration kind of thing going on, right? Window manager does not. Exactly. So I'm going to say XFCE is a light desktop environment, and that Fluxbox is a light window manager. I think with 256 megs of RAM, I could handle. Well, I know I can because I run Fluxbox or XFCE on it now under Slackware. So since obviously Arch is the shit, it should be able to do it.
It's real nice on my laptop, man. Right. It's working great. I mean, it worked pretty well with 256 meg. Now it's really blazing.
Yeah, and your 256 meg, you were trying to keep up with your freaking 1 gigahertz processor, right? Or what's in that thing?
I got a 2.4 gigahertz Celeron.
2.4 gigahertz Celeron. Ah, he's got the crispy one.
Yeah, it's a Celery processor.
The Celery processor.
It works fine, man. Hey, man, I'm not complaining. $550, all right?
Hey. You don't have.
It's not a freaking Dell.
I spent $400 on mine, and I'm sitting in front of, and it's a stink pad, man. It's only 1.12 or 1.4 something gigahertz.
Stink pads are nice machines, man. They hold their value.
Used $400, 512 meg. I love this thing, man. The screen is freaking gorgeous. Everything works really good on it. Couldn't ask for anything better.
Life is good.
And I didn't have to wait for it, and I'm one of those, you know. Immediate gratification. If I'm putting money out, man, I want to have it in my damn hand. So that's why I got this old stink pad, and you have your brand new fancy looking thingy over there.
Life is good, man.
Yeah.
It's silvery.
Back to the discussion I was
party.
What we were talking about before we started talking to Judd. Setting up a network printer with cups. Installing cups itself was pretty easy. Setting up the settings that I needed for my particular printer weren't particularly clear. I mean, I know...
You had to do the service thing, like I told you, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. That was easy. That part was easy. Okay, the difficult part was going through the stupid cups interface and setting up the settings the right way. For the life of me, I could not get the freaking thing to work correctly. So what I wound up doing was going through KDE Print Manager, and as soon as I went through the KDE Print Manager, man, started working, no problems.
Start right up, huh?
Simple, real simple. I don't know. Maybe it's me, man. I'm a freaking idiot. But like I said, this is the first time I ever did a network printer setup.
You know what? Traditionally, and those of you people who have listened to this show, that's right, Ben Rev. Good night, Ben Rev. It's past at 22:06, way past Ben Rev cutoff time. So good night, Ben Rev. Anyway, those of you who have listened to the show for a long time know that I absolutely cannot stand cups.
Cups? I mean, once you get it going...
I've always had a problem with that.
Once you get it going, it works well. It's just getting the right settings initially.
Yeah. Apps Filter was hands down the best printing system that was ever made for Linux. I don't care what anybody says, that's the shit. However, cups is now the big thing, and I have to say that this last version of cups that they released with Slackware 10.2 actually worked.
Where it didn't work in the last couple of releases.
It's like the first time that I've tried it that it actually worked like it was supposed to and got the settings right and did the whole thing and didn't piss with me and break everything.
Now, OS 10, who's running? Alan, you're running OS 10, right?
Yeah.
Does that use cups or does it has its own interface?
I believe it uses a version of it, but I interface with the cups on the Linux box without any problem with it.
Yeah.
Because that's what's supported in BSD, right, too? Cups?
You can get cups in BSD, yeah. You can do cups, you can do apps filter, you can do, I can't configure the stuff by hand, and, I guess if you're... Mm-hmm. If you were hand configuring it, it would be by hand, wouldn't it?
Well, you get the web interface now. It's running like a mini web server.
For cups, yes.
Yeah. Even that, though, I had problems with it. I just couldn't get the damn thing to work.
Localhost : 631.
Right, 631.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. But once I went through the KDE Print Manager, man, easy.
Started right up.
Yep.
See, like I said, I had to get my a month or so ago. I got a new computer a couple months ago from my wife, and installed Slackware on that. And we finally hooked my old beast of a printer up. And
the room warmer.
Yeah, the room warmer, right? And like not a bedroom. We're talking like a auditorium,
whole,
you know?
Say your whole house.
So we hooked the sucker up because my wife wanted to print out some financial stuff. And so I had, of course, had to get this new computer configured for it. And the only thing the new Slackware has on it is cups, right? Or by default, it's like cups.
By default, yeah. It's
so I went in and did the cups thing. And sure shit, man, it popped right in. I put the, you know, it's another network printer, just like,
right,
just like yours. Well, it's a lot older than yours, but it's the same basic principle.
Mine's about 10 years old.
Went right through there and started right up, and damn thing worked first try. It was a beautiful thing.
But I'm glad I took your advice, Link. You know, getting a used network laser printer, man, so much better than any freaking parallel USB, DeshJet. Don't waste your time.
You like
man.
The quality of the tech?
Oh,
the print,
it's so much better,
like
man.
It's dead clear. You can get little ass, teeny tiny fonts and all that stuff.
$25, man. You can't go wrong.
There's no like. There's you don't get that hair sliding shit that goes across the lines in your
you don't get the
text
smudges
and stuff and smudging and man, I hate those freaking bubble jet printers.
People go to a computer show and pick up a used HP LaserJet printer that has a network interface.
Hell yes,
and
even
life will
if it
be
doesn't
golden.
Even if it doesn't have a network interface, they all have parallel port interfaces and you can get on them there too. Network is even better, but.
Yeah, the one I have is parallel, and that works perfectly fine.
Yeah,
you got the same one as me.
Because it's plugged into a computer that's always on anyway. So
sure.
For me,
you know, and if you get it,
difference.
If you get it hooked up, and you get a parallel printer, right? HP parallel.
Yeah.
Like a laser printer. Don't buy any bubble jets, man. Get the laser printer.
I had the HP DeskJet that I had for years. Mm-hmm. It was fine.
See,
that's what I used.
They're not bad. The old DeskJets, but you want the laser printers. You gotta have the laser. And if you get a laser printer, even if you can't find one that's networked, you buy one and hook it up via your parallel port. It's a piece of cake to get Linux to be a print server, okay? A Linux box to be a print server. That's a piece of cake. So even if you have to do it that way, you can share that printer real, real easy with everything else on your network without a problem. But definitely, my vote would be going for an HP laser printer of some means or another, and you'd be so impressed. You know, if you got to have like the, what do these people do? They print out like photos and stuff, like photo color.
What, the photo printers?
Shit and stuff like that.
Yeah. Those pictures always end up looking like crap, though.
Yeah, they always look like crap anyway.
And you want decent pictures? You got to go to a Photoshop and do your cards there.
Sure.
On it
sure.
And get it printed
out. And you know they do have like
paper.
Color laser printers too. Like I've actually,
I
been
save
able
all
to
my
use
color
one yet, but
I save all my color printing for work. I use my Xerox account.
There you go, right? That'll work.
Well, I just
I don't get a bonus. I just get the Xerox account.
I just did my taxes, man, and I printed out the forms after I was done.
Uh-huh.
Great, man.
Oh, it's beautiful, man. It's beautiful.
Yeah, taxes is what H&R Block is for.
TurboTax Web. I had to set up the printer in Windows for my work setup, and let me tell you something, it wasn't easier than setting it up in Linux. It wasn't intuitive. The menus, this is Windows XP, the layout, was it straightforward? It wasn't easy. It was not easier than Linux.
The only intuitive interface is a nipple. That's I'm sticking
even
with
that they have
know,
problems with sometimes.
I'm sticking with that. That's what I believe to be true.
A nipple.
And the only time to eat diet food is while you're waiting for the steak to finish.
Everybody, that's exactly right. That's why they serve you this salad first, so that you have something to munch on while you're waiting for your steak.
Which reminds me, we need a tiki bar run.
No kidding, man. No kidding. But yeah, everybody knows what to do with the nipple, and if they don't, you know, they need a lot more help than I am able to provide.
So, Link, how's your iMac running, man?
It's running great. I really like it. You know, I have it sitting next to my, on some of those, you know, those cheesy-ass wooden tray tables.
That's how most of my computers are set up on.
I have two of them
compressed
next to my...
Compressed
pork crap. Yeah, no, these are like pine, right? The pine ones that open up the...
Walmart specials?
Yeah, like $10 a piece or something like that. Or they're probably cheaper now, right? They were $10 when I bought them. So I have two of them setting up. One has the keyboard on it. The other one has the iMac on it right next to my desk. And I've been using it all week as an extension of, you know, my regular work on my other computer just so I can have an extra set of windows open that I can keep track of at the same time. And, you know, I'll tell you what, even doing that and running my Instant Messenger client on it and my occasionally I'm running my music server, the GNU MP3D interface on there. And I just, you know, playing songs off of there and stuff like that. Off it goes, you know. Does its little thing.
And it's happy.
It just keeps right on running along. I'm digging it, you know. The only thing that I really am missing from there that kind of irritates me a little bit is since it's running Slackitosh, the new version of Slackware doesn't have GNOME on the back end anymore.
Okay.
And my CD ripping client is, or my favorite CD ripping client, right, is Grip.
Yeah.
Yeah, I use that, man. Okay. It's a nice program.
I like Grip. Grip is just a good program.
I like it better than the KDE ones.
I cannot get Grip to compile on that freaking thing because it wants every damn GNOME library in the whole freaking world.
Yes, I've had
that. To compile. That's a pain in my ass.
You know what's
and
a pain in the ass?
Somebody could make a package that, for that. That would be
it
awesome.
It wants to make sure that if you have GNOME, if you even have GNOME in there,
mm-hmm.
that you have the developers, all the developer packages
in
there as well.
Yeah. That sucks. And the CD player, like any, like even a command line client, CDP or something like that, or CD Play, none of that shit works on the iMac. I don't know why. I can't get it to play the KCD Play or whatever the hell the thing is. That freaking thing won't work. Nothing.
I had to make sure I put myself in the right group.
Oh, yeah?
That was the problem
maybe
there.
Maybe that's it. I'm going to have to try that from
group
or something like that.
You had to be in the group disks as well.
I couldn't get the damn thing to work, and that really annoyed the hell out of me. The only thing I could get to work was Zine.
Zine?
Okay. Zine, Zine. However the hell you want it. X-I-N-E, however the hell you want to say it. That's
Vagina.
What worked to play the CD. But, you know, and I was torqued about that for a day or two. But the reality is, the first thing I do when I get my CDs home is rip them anyway. And I can play it right off my music server. I really don't need to play a CD in the damn thing.
True.
You know? So, piss on it.
I have no rush to ever get a Mac. That's just me.
You know, I really like my Macs. I've had several Macs over the years, and I've had a lot of fun with them. But I never run Mac OS on them. I always run Linux on them.
C30, though.
Yeah, I enjoy running Linux on a variety of Linux or NetBSD, right? On a variety of different architectures. And I've done, you know, every damn architecture you can think of. I've run some form of Unix on there or Linux. And it's just it's a nice thing. You get to be able to play with different things and see how different architectures handle themselves and that kind of thing. It's pretty neat. And the PPC architecture is really good and robust stuff.
It's going to be good going forward, man. As Apple transitions the Intel chipset, all those old PPC machines are real cheap.
Yeah, they're going to be floundering around just ripe for a Linux install.
Yep, install Linux on them, man.
All ready for it.
Yep.
I wouldn't have a problem with that, buying one secondhand and putting Linux on it.
Well, yeah, I never bought a new one, I mean, but even if I did buy a new one, I would put Linux on it because, let's face it, that's what I like to run. You know what I mean? And I've seen a lot of people that have gone and done, bought a Mac, a new Mac, and done the Mac OS X stuff. Primarily what I see is this. I see hardcore Linux people that will run it for a while and play with it, and then they have to install Linux on it. You know, whether it be a dual boot or you know, instead of Mac OS X, they will install Linux on it one way or the other. The only people, and brand new people, of course, leave Mac OS X on it. And for some reason, like, a lot of the old Unix hacks that I see, people that have made their living running Solaris, I keep saying. Running
Solaris.
Yeah. People that have run Solaris for a long time or something like that, they will also switch to OS X and keep it.
Well, one of the reasons is it's nice to just be able to sit down on a machine and already have it all configured.
Yeah, it's pretty, and it just goes and does its thing, right?
I mean, because you know, I have the little Mac Mini, and I use that on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. You know, probably about 50-50 is, you know, if I sit down and sometimes, you know, the one keyboard's in front of the other, I'll use, you know, that's my way of determining. Mac keyboard's in front of the Linux keyboard, okay, I'll use the Mac tonight.
Right.
But it's nice, you know, if you're just browsing and shit like that, you know, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to worry about, well, let's see, what did I have to configure, you know, if I reinstall stuff. It's just nice to be able to pick up, and I can still do all the Unix-y type stuff I normally can do.
Right.
You know, you just pop up a terminal window and go wherever I want to go, do your command line stuff there on it. So it works. Like I said, it's nice to just use.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys seen that Linspire Mini? You can get that box without Linspire and throw any version of Linux on it, but it looks just like the little Mac Mini. Somebody saw that. You can get them.
Is it a real thing, or is that just somebody's BS joke?
No, that's real. It's a real thing. If you go to the Linspire website, you'll see it.
I'll have to check that out. But yeah, I understand, and I agree with you, too, and that's one of the reasons why I maintain a couple of Ubuntu boxes.
Yeah,
because it's a no-brainer desktop
stuff.
Yep, no-brainer.
I'm also
desktop.
Like people at work are, you know, asking me about computers, and I'm pushing them toward that too, because I'm tired of listening to people that, oh, it doesn't work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, here, stop worrying about the virus and everything. Go out and buy yourself a Mac.
Right.
You know, $500, right. And you're gonna, because when you ask them what they do. I look at pictures, I browse the web, I get my email.
I do the same thing. I'm considering in the back of my head, like, do I really want to be this person's tech support for the rest of my natural life?
Exactly. You
know. No. Okay, here's what you want to do. You want to take $500, which is what you're going to spend on a PC, and just go down to the damn Apple store, which is DoubleClick locally, right? Go down to DoubleClick, buy a Mac Mini.
Exactly.
Take it home, plug the damn thing in, and go.
I did the same. My niece bought a computer. Now, my niece is like 17 or 16. I don't know what exactly she did, you know, to fuck up the she's got a little Mac Mini she went out and bought.
Right.
She didn't screw it up. Unfortunately, she leaves herself logged in all the time because, you know, instant messaging and a 16-year-old, she's got to be on all the time.
MRF.
And her little brother got on it and started clicking and deleted stuff.
Oh.
And deleted some system files.
Oh.
But, you know.
Deleted system files.
Well, because she's, you know, she's the primary user, so she has access to that.
She has root privileges. Yeah. Oh, that's a sucky system.
But the hilarious thing is, it's nothing.
It's like Windows.
It's not serious.
It's like Linspire, man.
Windows. Whatever got deleted only keeps her from installing new things. It's not actually stopped her from using
it. Horrible.
This has been going on.
Didn't Dan say he disabled the screensaver? I see the damn thing going across here.
Yeah, I keep moving the mouse on.
Yeah.
But it's hilarious because whatever she did, and I'm not totally sure if it was system files or what it was, because, you know, I'm trying to get, you know, an explanation of what she did. I click on this and it doesn't work. You know, it's not really good information. But whatever she did or whatever that got done to it, it still runs perfectly.
But she just can't load new software.
She can't. I don't know if it, I think it's more operator error than anything else on it. But, you know, these people were able to screw up a laptop that I rebuilt for them under a week. Now, I haven't had any calls with the exception of that one.
But
you
rebuilt it with Windows on it, right?
Well, I had to. They're AOL people. And, you know, and again, I don't want to be tech support for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And, you know, at least with my parents, I can push them onto Ubuntu on that one because they have a cable modem.
Right.
So it made life a whole lot easier for me because it was like, start it up.
Yeah.
It's all, you know, here's the button you have to click to get your email.
That's what my dad was using, too. I told him to, you know, I told him to check it out, and he put it right on there.
But by the same token, Mom is going to be looking for a computer soon, too, and I'm going to push her onto a Mac Mini just because I don't want to hear the headaches.
Hey, that, you know.
And the only thing I'll do different
the
is there
is
I'll be the one setting it up.
Yeah,
so I'll
make
the,
sure
that
you're
I'll have
you got
the password this time.
But, you know, the price point is good there, And I know some people that have them, and they like them fairly well. What the hell? Why not?
They're good for people. They're good for the people that you don't really want to push onto Linux because, you know, like I said, AOL. That's a big one there because my sister is never going to go off of it. I just know that
they can get
fact.
Connected AOL with a Mac Mini and OS 10.
Yeah,
no shit.
There's a client for it.
That's just evil.
That is evil.
but it works perfectly for them. So I have to. Yeah. It may be evil to us, but it works perfectly
for
them.
It's like Steve Jobs giving Satan a hand job. You know, kind of evil. Something weird going on there, you know?
It keeps my cell phone from going off at all hours of the day, going, Uncle, I can't get this to work.
Oh, man. Yes. All right, guys. Well,
we got any updates?
We got any updates going on? You want to do a Frapper
read
or something?
We got to actually
do a Frapper because
we have
so much time.
We have a lot of Frapper because you guys didn't do one last week.
It's your fault. You bastard, you.
Yeah, my son was sick. What are you going to do? Let's see. Let's see. Who should we start with? We're going to start with Benjamin Adams from West Henrietta, New York. No Master Yoda from Macon, Georgia. Jeff from Gainesville, Virginia. Tronix from Kansas City, Missouri. Bjorn from Bergen, Norway. Craig from Marietta, California. Chris Debenham from Sydney, New South Wales, Australia. Yuri from Yokohama, Japan, our first Japanese listener.
Yeah.
Yuri, all right, man.
Welcome.
We've got Romana Brandon from Adelaide, South Australia. We got Gustav H. from Gothenburg, Sweden. We got Aaron Kreitenberg from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Zeke G4 from Chile, from Santiago de Chile. I think he's our first Chilean listener. We got Bob Smith from Bluff City, Tennessee. We've got Dookie Smack from Corona, California. We've got Ice Cave 89 from Nib, Nordjylland, Denmark. Another Danish listener. We have quite a bit of people in Denmark. We've got Dr. Esquire from Bessemer, Alabama. Bowen Acumen from Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada. Jason from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We've got, Len Kane from Berkeley Springs, West Virginia. Shane Roberts from Fairgrove, Missouri. Tracy Montgomery from Weatherford, Texas. Troy Curtis Jr. from Greenville, Texas. Mondi from Buenos Aires, Argentina. Dean Evans from Sydney, Australia. Who else? We've got Daniel Grothman from Las Vegas, Nevada. Mace N. from Innsbruck, Austria. Chuck Jolly from Horn Lake, Missouri. JP from Edmonton, Canada. We've got Sheep in Taz from Goole, England. We've got Scott Mays from Berkeley, California.
He bitches about us butchering people's names. You know that?
Sheeping Taz. We got Chris Groman.
This sounds like a disease, man.
We got Chris Groman from Philly, Ohio. Terrence Galati from West Hills, California. Andor from Oakland, California. We've got Adam Fubar from Maple Heights, Ohio.
So what number are we up to now?
Let me see. Last I checked, it was like 409.
Cool.
Yeah, 409. So we're making progress. Thank you, everybody, for registering on Frapper. Any new listeners, please go in there and register. Let us know where you're at, man. We like hearing from you, and we will do a shout-out to you. Any other shout-outs this week?
I believe that's it. We've gotten some... I know we got a few emails from people this week, and I'd love to, say who they were and what they said, but I really don't remember at this point in time.
I just want to give a shout out to Jodlin, man.
Jodlin
created a logo for us, and one of the things that we're going to be giving out as swag at the Linux World Expo is stickers. And Jodlin designed the design for us, son. I got a
proof. Go Jodlin.
Thank you, Jodlin. I got a proof from.
Yes, he's got a. Make sure you send us your address and stuff
we're
going to
send some out.
We
want to
send some stickers to you and stuff like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Really cool.
Absolutely. I sent the design out to the sticker company, and they came back with a proof, and it didn't look quite right because the antenna was too big. So I spoke to Jodlin, and he sent me a new version that looked a little different, and it's real nice. I don't know if you guys...
Logo a little bit bigger?
Yeah, I'll show it to you, man. It's real nice. It's real nice. Jodlin did a fantastic job. And then
he is the man.
Absolutely.
The man.
What else? We're moving our heads with our plans for the Linux World Expo. We hope to see everybody there. We're probably going to plan some kind of a meetup.
Bye-bye, BinRev.
Yeah, BinRev was gone a long time ago.
And we're probably going to have some get-togethers after the show hours. We've been talking to guys from Linux Questions and also the Linux Terminal Server Project people, so we might do something with them as well. And we definitely want to see all you guys there and meet you in person.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Stop by, because, like, if you guys don't stop by and want to talk and stuff, we're going to be going crazy sitting there for 3 days with our thumbs up our asses, you know? Plus, you know, we really bugged the hell out of these people to get a .org booth. So they're going to expect to want to see some people hanging out there with us, too.
I hope so, yeah.
The party is on, man. Bring it over there. We have to stay there, so, you know, by all means, you can, you're welcome to come in and visit us and, you know, bring us food and whatever else.
Next week's guest is Jeremy Allison from Samba Project. That should be a good interview, man.
Yeah.
We like Samba.
Yeah.
And the week after that, we got Dean Haglin from X-Files Lone Gunman fame.
Yes, that's going to be cool.
Good things, man, on the horizon.
That's going to be cool. We're going to find out how to keep our lappy toppies cool.
Yes.
None of that there penis and testicle burn that those other guys were getting.
Sterilization techniques?
That's right. No burning the pee-pee with your laptops. Dean Haglin's going to tell us how to make sure that you don't do that.
Well, wrapping things up, this has been episode 122.
122. That's a lot.
We screwed up in the beginning. We apologize again. We finally got the show going, and I think we had a decent show.
Yeah, it's Dan's fault.
Yeah, it's Dan's fault. Got to go to Las Vegas.
Leave us all set up here like we're ready to go in and turn the damn Ethernet interface off, bastard.
So, till next week, till next time, I'm Pat.
I'm Link.
I'm Alan.
Good night, folks.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on the Tech Show.
Shut up. Just shut up.
Okay.
Hey, it's Tom McFadden from Tupperville, Ontario, Canada. And if you're looking for a podcatcher that just works, use Bosch Potter. Fuck off. Bosch? Bash. What the fuck's the name of that thing? Bash Potter. Use it. It works. Spell it right in Google and maybe you'll find the fucking thing.
I love that.
I have never prayed here before.
Crab.
I have no tongue for it.
No one. I haven't heard this in a long time.
Even you will remember if we were good men or bad. Why we fought or why we died. No. All that matters is that two stood against many. That's what's important. Valor pleases you, Crab. So grant me one request. Grant me revenge!
If you do not listen,
then to hell with you! Good night, everybody.